take your very best shot and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action.
Tim Gallagher joins the Chicago Bullseye. Tim, basketball historian, it's great to have you on again in Chicago Bullseye. It's been a while since we last chatted. Looking forward to getting your take on all things Bulls and NBA. How are things going, brother?
They're going well. It has been a while since we talked. We had the All-Star break, All-Star game, and the trade deadline, so lots of interesting things have happened, and we'll obviously highlight how the Bulls fit into that.
Yeah, let's start out with the moves made at the trade deadline. You know, let's start out with Sacramento, Boogie Cousins, and go from there. What was your impression of that trade overall for the Kings, who've taken quite a bit of heat in that decision, and overall some of the other moves at the trade deadline?
Sure. Yeah, we'll kind of cover trades as well as signings, because there are some waves of guys because of salary reasons or whatever that the others have picked up, so we'll touch on that. And you and I have talked about DeMarcus Cousins over quite a few years now on the podcast, and I think we both share a dislike and disgust of him. So, and part of me thinks it's fortunate that the Kings had anybody that were really interested in giving up assets for him, because he just disgusts me, you know, in terms of his, aside from his talent, I think it's overshadowed by his attitude and distractions and just what an unpleasant teammate he is. And that we've seen early on, and granted it may take some time to get him integrated into what the Pelicans are doing, but it's the same old stuff, right? It's a different uniform, though, but they're losing. He's getting technical fouls. He's getting suspensions. He's surly on the floor. And so I give the Kings credit, because they must see some of that, like you and I see, that we can't build a positive future with this guy as the centerpiece of it. It's just not worth it. And New Orleans is one of those teams that's willing to take the risk. And I thought the assets they gave up were you know, not devastating, right? If Buddy Hield was the centerpiece of that, I think New Orleans was probably happy to take that risk. So he's just not someone I enjoy watching and following, just because there's so many other good citizens in the league and guys that play right and are good team players and have good attitudes. It's just a guy like him is just unpleasant for me to follow.
Agree completely, 100%. I've never been a fan of his demeanor or his locker room presence. There's a lot of disturbing things that you hear about him. You know, that said, though, overall, you kind of expected a little bit of a higher return from the guy, didn't you? I mean, he's still a top 12 player, and that's the best they could do. It's kind of surprising to me.
Right. Well, I think, like I said, we're not alone to realize what a burden this guy is, right? It's a risk-reward, and I don't think a lot of teams really wanted to take that risk, despite what potential upside there might be. Alvin Gentry's a pretty calm presence as a coach. They've got Anthony Davis and that Kentucky connection. So I can see the reasons New Orleans thought maybe we can make this work. We've got a not George Karl-like coach who's going to be in Cousins' face and not tolerate anything. And then another Kentucky player and maybe that fraternal connection that those guys have might help keep them in check. And Cousins isn't the alpha dog on the team with Anthony Davis, so although he's probably not far behind in terms of talent, but you'd still put Anthony Davis ahead of him. So, I see the reason for it. And, you know, and realistically, neither one of those teams is going anywhere. I don't really see the Pelicans even picking him up, making a move. I know they're only a few games out of the number 8 spot, which is pretty wide open in the West, but I still don't see it happening.
Yeah, I agree completely. Why don't we move on, though, to the other big move, the Bulls move, sending Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson over for Cameron Payne and, you know, a couple other assets. What did you think of that move overall? I'd love to get your take on Cameron Payne. You're much more aware of him in the college game than we are as Bulls fans.
Right. Well, I understood the move. I think we all love Taj Gibson and what he brought to the team and someone the Bulls drafted and developed, and it was really kind of the the case study of how to do it right with the player, and he was having an outstanding season this year. It's just that where he is in the stage of his career and where the Bulls are as a franchise and where they're going, it was very unlikely that they were going to sign him for what he's going to command on the open market. So I understood the trade, even though he's been a valuable and likable player. McDermott, again, we've talked about this on podcast before. He's a favorite and a player I really have liked since watching him play in college. However, his production just hasn't been what I expected it would be, or what I think what we'd all hope for by this point, for various reasons. Maybe it was injuries, maybe it was team chemistry, maybe it was finding out what his correct role was, and even recognizing his deficiencies maybe on the defensive end. But someone that can score the ball like that, you'd think there'd be a spot for him. And in my mind, by this point of career, I'd see him as a 15-point-a-game scorer. And that consistency just wasn't there. And so I kind of sad to see him go, but understood that in some ways as well. And as far as the assets that the Bulls got back, Cameron Payne, so he's a young point guard out of Murray State. And I'll put a quick caveat here, because I know I've talked in the past about how I like point guards that have come from mid-major schools. And I know Isaiah Cannon is from Murray State as well and hasn't really delivered for the Bulls. So let's put that on the side burner for now. But I've always been a big proponent of if a point guard or a guard from a mid-major school is the star player of their league, an elite player in their league, I think that's the kind of player that the NBA needs to take a long look at. And when I say that, I mean, sure, if you're a point guard and you're playing in the ACC against Duke and North Carolina and those schools, you're going to face other McDonald All-Americans type players and outstanding players. I get that. But when you're playing in a mid-major league like a Murray State, you're not necessarily facing a complete package guard on the other side, but you're going to face a guy that is super quick but maybe can't shoot from the outside. You're going to face a guy that's a deadly outside shooter but maybe doesn't have the speed. And so I think it helps players like a Cameron Payne really develop their game because they're playing against specialists or different types of players. And also you're playing in smaller gyms in more crazy environments, I think, than some of the big arenas of the big conference schools. So all that said, you see guys in the NBA like a Damian Lillard from Weber State, a C.J. McCollum from Lehigh, even Curry from Davidson. I saw the OKC just picked up Norris Cole, who's been on championship teams with Miami. He's out of Cleveland State. So, and even looking at the past, you've got a guy like Maurice Cheeks from West Texas State or John Stockton from Gonzaga and Nash from Santa Clara. So I think there's a good pattern of players that have come up to that situation. And obviously, as a point guard in Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook owns that position for as long as he wants it. So I think it's an interesting asset that the Bulls can pick up. I don't know how ready he is to contribute today, but in my mind, I see him as a guy maybe in the summer league, averaging 17 a game and being a all-summer league type player and really showing his next-level skills and then working his way into serious minutes in the future. As far as the other assets, Anthony Morrow out of Georgia Tech, he's always been known as a great shooter, prolific scorer, but somehow he's never worked into the rotation with the teams he's been on, so obviously there's some deficiency in his game. Anybody who can shoot the ball that well, he's not been anything more than much of a role player. So, and then Joffrey Laverne, I know he's a Euro, big guy, originally played in Denver. I don't know that much about him. So I guess it's wait and see on some of these assets. But with Payne, I think, is the most intriguing. And we'll see if Laverne is good enough to maybe get, with Paul Zipser kind of coming along, I don't know that, Laverne, really has much of an opportunity, at least in the short run.
Agree completely. It's all about Payne. And, so far he's really struggled. Really struggled with the team in the few games he's played. Obviously he's a young kid. There's a lot left to go. I think he's played a total of around 1,000 minutes in the NBA, and I always say you got to at least wait between 1,500 to 2,000 total minutes before you start getting a really good idea of how good the kid is. He's only played 300 minutes this year, which is actually less than Zipser.
Well, he was injured early in the season as well, so it wasn't just he couldn't get off the bench. He had an injury. I forget what it was, but it was out.
Yep.
Yeah. And so he missed a lot of time. I think he missed all of the preseason. So, but you know, I know last year at times, you know, and obviously OKC went deep into the playoffs, and you know, certainly had Golden State seriously on the ropes. And he, you know, when he got in, I thought Payne played respectably in the limited minutes he had. So, and hopefully being in that a culture like OKC is, you know, he developed some good habits and being around Westbrook and obviously even Durant for a time. So, the other thing about the trade that I think is going to help the Bulls, and we saw a little bit of it last night in the Golden State win, is, you know, it's going to open up minutes for players like Denzel Valentine. So, and even though Doug's a great shooter, I think Valentine in the long run is a much more versatile player overall, not as good a shooter as Doug, but you know, we're starting to see some flashes now of what Valentine can do, and at times when he's in there as a trio of wings with Wade and Jimmy, I think that presents some interesting matchup options, and Valentine's a really good passer, and so I've seen some intriguing things with that mix on the floor as well.
I agree completely. So any other moves at the trade deadline, I know it's kind of limited, that you'd want to discuss? And then go into, if you don't mind, the buyouts and some of these players that have, you know, jumped on to other teams, starting with Andrew Bogut.
Right. Well, we'll talk about the Eastern Conference and the teams the Bulls are chasing or that are a little bit ahead of them. So Toronto, obviously, picking up Serge Ibaka and P.J. Tucker, I thought was interesting. Things, for whatever reason, didn't pan out for Ibaka in Orlando. But Orlando also is kind of stayed one of those wastelands, and even with the coaching change of Vogel, they're still languishing at the, you know, in the bottom of the standings like they typically always have. But P.J. Tucker is an interesting guy. You know, fans may not know that much about him in Phoenix, but you know, I think as these teams behind Cleveland are looking at matchups and guys like, you know, Jay Crowder-like guys that can maybe physically hang with LeBron or give him a little trouble, obviously no one's going to shut down LeBron, but you know, that's where you got the Damari Carrolls and the Jay Crowders, and now a P.J. Tucker type athlete and body to at least maybe slow LeBron down a little bit. So I thought that was an interesting pickup for them as well. You know, Cleveland is, you know, they're dealing with injury issues currently and minutes issues with LeBron, but you know, who they are kind of patching it together with duct tape, I think. Because you've got old guys like Bogut and Darren Williams who have been very good players in the league, even elite level at points of their career, but injury prone and aging. So, again, they're trying to just get to the finish line, I think, somehow.
Absolutely. Any other big moves? How about in the West that, or any other buyouts that, and then pickups that you wanted to touch on?
Those are really the key ones that I wanted to mention. You know, as far as the other teams in contention, you know, they haven't really made the, you know, any significant moves.
How about the Lou Williams trade? That's the one I wanted to touch on. The Lakers sending Lou Williams over to the Rockets.
Well, and like the Rockets needed another scorer. You know, with the way Eric Gordon is playing and Ryan Anderson and. Yeah, you know, and that's probably been one of the biggest surprise teams for me in the league. I certainly saw them making the playoffs, but I don't think anyone really saw that D'Antoni making James Harden a point guard, which James Harden is not necessarily known to be a distributor and an assist type of a guy, that he's embraced that role and how everyone's contributed there. They're going to be a dangerous team just because of how potent they are offensively. And, so Lou Williams was an interesting pickup. I didn't have that one on my notes here. You know, the other thing that's just affecting a lot of teams are the injuries now, with Durant out for a while, now Kyle Lowry with the wrist injury, and obviously J.R. Smith and Kevin Love still on the injured list for Cleveland. And, you know, as you look at the standings, the Celtics are just a couple of games behind now, four in the loss column, two in the win column, so... I was just thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if the way things are trending, if the Celtics somehow ended up with the number one seed in the East and the Spurs would get it in the West?
It would be something, wouldn't it? I mean, it really set up potential very interesting second and third round matchup. Let's touch on the Bulls, though. Now, you know, since the last time we talked, they've been on a little bit of a run, you know, four or five wins. Of course, they always throw that stinker in there with the, you know, embarrassing home loss to Denver where they were beat up pretty bad. How do you think this team is playing right now? Where do you think going forward they're still a playoff team?
Well, I still think they're a playoff team. I mean, and part of it is, you know, the teams around them or behind them don't seem like they're trending upwards to me. And they do seem to have played well lately. You're right, they always do seem to drop in a stinker. Just when you think they turned a corner and maybe they're going to get on a little run here and win 5 out of 6 or whatever, they'll do something like that. I do feel like they're trending up. And obviously, beating Golden State under any circumstances is a great win. And, you know, there were points in that game where, you know, Golden State was ready to make their move, and probably 9 times out of 10 they do, right, where, you know, Nico blocks Curry's shot, he runs over in front of the bench and throws up a desperation long two and swish, and usually that's where the momentum shifts and Golden State takes command of the game and it's over. But the Bulls persevered and hung on and won, and, you know, and I think it was really encouraging to see the young talent, to see the way Portis played last night. And even though Felicio's box score wasn't that impressive, I thought he made good decisions and was really active. I really liked how active his feet were, getting out on Curry on a switch on one of the screen rolls, and that he didn't foul, and that he was moving his feet and active out by the three-point line. And just some real encouraging things, and also the blend of the lineup with, you know, you've got Jimmy and Wade at the closers, and then, you know, a mix of the younger guys, and, you know, Fred seems to have a good sense of when to use Lopez and when to maybe go smaller or younger, or someone that's a little more active in terms of maybe guarding the perimeter. So I think there's some good signs and good trends. Rondo had a great game last night, especially in the third quarter. Zipser hitting that three, I mean, that was really the dagger. So, you have to give Fred credit, I guess, for having Zipser in the game at that point, right? I wouldn't have even had him in the game at that point. But the fact that he was on the floor and...
Second, Jim. Hold on 1 second. Give me 1 second. Sorry.
That he was on the floor and Felicio found him and he hit the shot. And that was a clutch shot and against an elite team. And, you know, a really nice home win.
Yeah, I'm really shocked that Zipser's become a contributing member to this team. I saw him play for Windy City, and he had a big shot at the end of that game, a big three. But I didn't think he had the lateral quickness. I mean, you could tell he had a lot of, you know, he could handle the ball, he could make good decisions passing the ball. There's a lot of good things about the kid, but I didn't think he was anywhere near ready to contribute at the pro level. And, you know, he's proven me wrong for the most part. Although his shooting numbers still, I think, are pretty low overall. You know, he's got a long way to go there before he's a finished product, but, man, that was a big shot. And he had a really nice game last night against Golden State. One thing about him, he definitely doesn't seem to shrink in the moment, right? He seems to have the confidence and not worry too much, as Nico has tended to do.
Right. Well, interesting about Zipser, I ran into one of my son's former club team coach who played a little bit in the NBA, a guy named Arvid Kramer. He played on the Nuggets back in the late 70s for a year, and then played overseas for many years in Germany, and now his son's playing in Germany. So I'd asked him, I ran into him at a high school game, and he knows about my interest in the Bulls and the podcast and so on. And so we talked a little bit about Zipser, and he assured me that Zipser has been one of the top players in Germany. He's been schooled and trained, you know, in the basketball system there, you know, national team type things for years. So he didn't bat an eye in terms of this was when Zipser was starting to get some more significant playing time, and you and I were kind of surprised by it, so I did mention it to him, and Arvid was very matter-of-fact that Zipser knows what he's doing, and maybe he doesn't have NBA experience, but he knows how to play. So anyway, if that eases any of our minds, you know, there's a little endorsement for Zipser there. You know, one thing that didn't happen at the trade deadline was the Bulls trading Jimmy Butler, and I still don't know how real any of that talk really was. And the fact that, you know, you would think if the Celtics were really intent on making a run for the title this year, that they would have tried to maybe trade that Brooklyn pick and try to get a Paul George or Carmelo or Jimmy Butler. And they may have tried to some degree, or maybe the other assets that Boston would have been asked to give up would have been too much. And the other thing I think that plays into that mix is that the teams like Chicago, in particular, is if they were going to make the trade for Boston's pick, they want to be darn sure where that pick comes out in the lottery. Because if it's not the first or second pick, I'm not sure. Well, I don't know if it'd be worth making that deal anyway. But if it's the number one pick and you get Lonzo Ball, or it's the number two pick and you need a elite scoring guard, you get Malik Monk from Kentucky, then maybe you think about it if you're going to go younger or get a kind of a game-changing type of player. But you know, for players at the level of Jimmy and Paul George in particular, I'm not so sure about it. I think there's a little too much mileage and non-winning seasons under Carmelo's belt to make him as in demand as those other two guys. But I'm pretty sure that trade didn't happen, also, you know, mainly because we won't know until that draft lottery that happens sometime during the playoffs in terms of which team is really picking where.
Yeah, I think Danny Ainge, from what I've heard, he would not give up any that pick, that Nets pick, as an unprotected pick, which to me is absolutely insane. If you want Jimmy Butler, you better unprotect that pick. That pick better come to us along with other good assets. And, you know, if you're not willing to do that, then you're overrating your own assets and you're not going to get them, period. You know, it's insane to me that from what I heard, that he wouldn't unprotect that pick. It's just, I don't know what he's thinking.
Well, I'm thinking, and maybe I'm a little biased because I'm on the West Coast, and I just saw Lonzo Ball play again on Wednesday night in person against Washington. And I'm telling you, I've raved about him quite a bit on our podcast, that this kid is so special. And at the UCLA game the other night, Luke Walton was there in the stands, as was D'Angelo Russell, Brandon Ingram, Lamar Odom. They weren't all sitting together, but they were there. And I'm telling you, this kid is so dynamic in terms of unselfish floor leader, and just the ease that he makes the game for all of his teammates, and they just love playing with him, right? And so I think whoever may get the number one pick, it would be hard to pass him up, and Danny Ainge is no dummy, right? So if he's seen him play in person, or any of these executives, and obviously there's talk now that because of Magic Johnson taking over in the front office of the Lakers and Lonzo Ball being from L.A. originally and playing at UCLA, that, you know, that they're going to try to find some way to get him in a Laker uniform. So there's a lot of interesting things happening. But beyond the first couple of guys, I mean, this is a talented draft, but you know, to give up a Jimmy Butler or Paul George, you're going to need a guy with a Lonzo Ball type of presence. You know, you got to get more than like a Josh Jackson from Kansas. There's guys like him. As good as he is, there's guys like him that come along every year. But a guy like Ball, or what I've not seen Malik Monk in person, but you know, he just put up 30.5 the other night and just is a scoring machine. So there's certain guys that I think are a cut above some of the other players in what's going to be a pretty strong draft, you know, anyway.
No, I agree completely. I mean, the more I think about it, if I understand why Ainge would just say, you know, I'm not going to make a trade, period. I'm just going to keep him. And maybe change some of those other assets, trade some of those other assets. But eventually he's got to make some trades. You can't pay everybody. You know, and
right.
You have Isaiah Thomas is going to be, he's on a cheap contract. Get another year, he's going to want a major payday. So somebody's got to go. You know what I mean? I don't understand what he's thinking there. But if he wanted to take Ball, fine. You know, that's a good move probably, right? And you're not going to beat the Cavs this year, probably not next year. But, you know, we'll see what happens. And it'd be very interesting. You know, I still think that move is going to be there, trading Jimmy potentially. It's still going to be there, you know, around the summer, you know, before or after the draft. But we'll see what happens.
Right. You know, and Fred, I heard you on the radio the other day. Enjoyed that. And one of the things, as we're talking about the Bulls front office and the Gar Pax situation, You know, I still think they haven't gotten enough credit for players they didn't elect to keep. And I'm talking about Noah and Rose. And I've mentioned this in the past where, number one, it was just, I thought it was nice how they could gracefully exit those guys. Because those are two of the beloved players in the Bulls franchise over the last 10 years. And one or both may someday have their jersey hanging in the United Center. And that both of them have worn out their time with the Bulls. And so to be able to kind of gracefully exit those guys, and here Noah signs a big contract with the Knicks, which we thought was crazy at the time, and now he's out for the season and really wasn't productive, and the Knicks are still a mess. And Derrick Rose is, I think, I don't know anyone I've talked to that knows anything about basketball that doesn't recognize he's lost a step or two. And, you know, I feel bad for him because of the injury, but he's aging as well. So that the Bulls were able to get assets that are still contributing, like Robin Lopez and Jerry and Grant, out of that deal, and the fact that there wasn't a nasty breakup of getting rid of those guys, I think the Bulls front office deserves some credit for that as well. What do you think?
I agree 100%. They get zero credit for that, and you know they could have turned Noah into an asset. We don't know. He got hurt, you know, after 29 games, so we don't know if they were able to do that. We still have an asset we're waiting on for Dang. Luol Deng's another example of a player. They traded at the earliest possible time. He now signs with the Lakers, and look what a disaster that contract is. And, you know, people always forget, this is not the Major League Baseball. There's still a cap. And as these salaries go up, that cap is going to come more and more into, you know, into factor here, how capped out teams are. The Knicks have so many bad contracts at 3 or 4 years out. And Noah, the Lakers have a bad contract in Deng and Mozgov. The Bulls have zero bad contracts. They have nothing but cap room going forward. You know, think about it. What bad contract do they have on the books? Zero. So I think they've done things right, and you touched on a great point. Letting the guys go when they should have. I think you make that argument with Gordon, although I disagreed with it at the time. They know the right time to let these guys go, so I agree completely.
Yeah, and wasn't there something at the time where, I don't recall all the details, but I think there was something to the fact that Gordon's agent or his, you know, his camp was making some pretty outrageous demands, even for how he improved and you know, where he was in his career. And
no doubt. I mean, I love Ben Gordon. I thought he was great for this team, for the Bulls. He decided to reject their offer, which in retrospect was very fair, and you know, play out his last season and become a full-time free agent and sign a pretty big contract with Detroit. And, you know, that in retrospect, looking back, that contract did not work out, right? It was a bad contract. So the Bulls made the right decision there. They've made the right decision on everyone. The only guy you could make the argument it wasn't a right decision was to let Korver go. And I don't think two things about that. I don't think that was a decision in the front office. I think they were forced into that due to salary cap restrictions and, you know, maybe management directives. And number two, Tibbs was the coach, and he didn't play Korver. He played bums ahead of him. He only played 20 minutes per game in his first year and 22 minutes per game his second year. So, obviously, why are you going to sign a guy to massive amounts of money when your head coach doesn't believe in him? So, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I think he wasn't Tibbs' type of player. And I don't know that any of us would have seen, you know, how the Kyle Korver would only be when they'd be an NBA All-Star. I mean, good for him, and I love guys that can shoot. But, I think it's a combination of those things, right? And I don't know that many would have forecasted how good he would have become. And I think you know, his peak years with the Hawks, the stars aligned, right? They brought in Budenholzer from the Spurs system, and they really, you know, they had a little magic run that one regular season where he really broke out. But he's always been able to shoot the ball, and now we've seen the Cleveland, of course. So, but interesting times, and, you know, I think the one interesting thing in the playoffs in both conferences is that last playoff spot in the West is certainly up for grabs, and then certainly beyond the Hawks, I think the Bulls will get in, but, you know, everybody from 6 to, you know, probably 11, you know, which is, You got the Bulls, Pacers, Pistons, Heat, and Bucks, and Hornets. I think any of those teams could make a run to get, you know, that last one or two spots. The Pacers have still been kind of overachieving, in my view. Now they're tied with the Bulls and just one game over 500. So maybe they are kind of slowly getting back to reality. And I know there's some real uncertainty there about Paul George staying long-term, which might affect kind of the team chemistry, I guess you'd say. So, it'll be interesting to see where things are going. But I definitely feel like the Bulls are trending up at the moment. But as we've seen throughout the season, that could change in a moment's notice. But in my one other little nitpick with Wade, and he's kind of slowed down, obviously. And, you know, he had a couple key shots late in games. You know, last night, he had a key jumper there, you know, right around at the foul line when they really needed it. You know, I still think he's kind of a little fussy and complains a little too much on non-calls and things that I know he feels like his stature in the league he deserves. But usually when I run it back with the DVR or watch the replay, the refs usually have it right. You know, he's not getting, you know, slapped on the arm or bumped or whatever. It's just maybe he's gotten a little sloppy or lost a step. But again, I'm nitpicking because I think overall his production has been great and just the way he and Jimmy have been able to work together has been really encouraging.
One last question before I let you go, Quinn, and thank you so much for being so generous with your time. I did want to ask you about the Durant injury. Let's say, hypothetically, he can't come back, and this team goes into the playoffs without Durant services till at least the finals, maybe the Western Conference Finals. Do you think that team is susceptible to an actual loss in round one or two?
I do. And I say that just because of there's no Harrison Barnes there anymore. Iguodala's a little bit older. And as you saw last night, if Steph and Clay are a little bit off, you know, that secondary group, you know, Livingston, Iguodala, you know, those guys are really good players. But as we talked about, they had to kind of clear out their bench, and guys that had been really steady contributors on those two teams that got to the finals, one that won it and one that came within a minute or two of winning it. I'm talking Barbosa, Harrison Barnes, Bogut, of course. So, you know, some guys that meant a lot to the success of that team. So with the Warriors, what I'm saying is the Warriors don't have the depth they've had in the last couple of years. And if they, I think they'll get certainly to the second round of the playoffs fairly easily, but then if they're playing a Houston or an OKC, you know, OKC is a very dangerous team, and obviously picking up Taj and Doug McDermott doesn't hurt their status at all. And so, of course, I see them as vulnerable.
Well, interesting. That'd be huge.
What do you think? What do you think?
I don't think they're. I think the only team that could beat them from the West is the Spurs. So it depends on when they'd face them. I guess technically, too, looking at it, maybe Houston, right? If Houston's got those shooters, you never know. Let's say all those guys get hot in the series. That's going to be a really difficult team to beat. But those are the only two teams. The Clippers are too hurt, and they always seem to, you know, do something horrific and come playoff time. They have the talent. But the Spurs and Houston, if they get hot enough. So it kind of depends on when they play those two teams, right? Right now, they'll probably play a horrible 8-seed team in the first round, and they're going to destroy them no matter what without Durant services. Round two comes around. They go against Houston, and that's going to be tough. But if they play a team like Memphis, they'll run right over all those teams.
What about Oklahoma City?
I don't think they have enough. I don't think they have enough. I do like that team now with those additions, but they still don't have enough shooting for me. You know, they got Doug, right? That's it. That team really doesn't have that much shooting, enough 3-point
right.
shooting to scare anybody. Do you think they can beat them?
Well, if Golden State's having some injury issues and a little bit depleted, and I would certainly pick Golden State to win that series, but I'm just saying that OKC is dangerous, and you know, obviously with Westbrook, ability to go off, and he's still got Steven Adams, Oladipo's been okay, and I know he's injured right now, but if they get him back, obviously picking up Taj and Doug, they've got Sabonis, they've got Cantor, so that, you know, there's some talent there. and can be dangerous. Now, again, it's hard to pick against Golden State. They did have an off night last night, but maybe some of that credit to the Bulls for causing that. And
what's your top three? Who are your top three threats to the Warriors in order from worst to best, least likely to most likely to beat them?
In the West, I would go with San Antonio, Houston, and then Oklahoma City. I know Oklahoma City's record's not as good as maybe Utah. But I agree with you. The Clippers or the Grizzlies aren't going to give them any trouble. The Jazz aren't quite ready yet. They are an emerging franchise, and they're progressing how I expected them to, but I don't see them ready to beat an elite team in a playoff series yet. So I would say those three teams, and as we've talked about before, the Warriors have somehow managed to avoid the Spurs the last 2 years in the playoffs. So,
right, good point.
I guess we don't know how it's going to play out, but I don't think there's any team that wants to play the Spurs. With Pau Gasol there now, and the way Kawhi Leonard's continued to develop from, I don't know how much higher of an elite player you can become, but he's scratching the ceiling for that.
Yeah. Tim, again, you continue to provide podcast gold for us. We can't thank you enough for joining the show. Looking forward to having you on, hopefully again next week to see where the beloved Bulls are. But hopefully we can keep on this mini winning streak, five out of six. Let's see if we can go 7 out of 8, 8 out of 9, and get a nice little run going here.
Right. Who do they have at home Saturday? I know it's a home game.
They got the Clippers at home.
Oh, yeah, yep. So that'll be a good challenge and test to see if they can build on what they did the other night. And that'll be a fun one to watch. And then we've got NCAA tournament coming up right around the corner, so that's going to be very exciting as well and always a great time of year.
Sounds good. Tim, great talking to you as always. And maybe we'll have another show next week. Let's plan on talking about some players to look for in the tournament, your favorite players to watch, keep an eye out. For purposes of eventually ending up in the NBA draft and possibly on the beloved Bull.
Sounds great, Fred. All right.
Have a good one.
Talking with you.
Have a great weekend, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye.